You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The narrator of Nina Kurimboy's debut novel, Miss Timmins' School for Girls, is Charo Apte, a teacher in a small private school in India whose life is turned upside down when she becomes the prime suspect in a local murder. It's published by Harper, and I'm very pleased to welcome Nina Kurimboy to our show today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, I'm honored.
You have set your book in a boarding school for girls in Panchgani, India, in 1974. What part of India is that?
It's a small town in the hills outside in western India, about an eight-hour drive from Bombay in those days. Now with the highways, it's a little closer, but it's close to Bombay.
Did you attend such a school?
I did, in fact, attend a very similar school in the actual town of Panchgani, which is a real town.
But not Miss Timmins.
I've changed the name, and the story, of course, is fiction, but the setting is really Israel.
So no one was accused of murder while you were attending the school?
Fortunately not.
Miss Timmins' School for Girls was founded to educate daughters of British civil servants. What kinds of girls were attending the school in 1974, over a quarter century after the British left India?
Well, by the time we get to 74, we have daughters of rich businessmen from Bombay who were sent there to get the right kind of English education. We also had girls from sort of the middle west, like Aden and places like that. And then we had some students whose parents kind of ran sugar estates, so there were no schools where they were.
But they all wanted a British education, not an Indian education?
Well, the Anglo-Indian tradition goes back a long way, and the British education...
But it's an ambivalent tradition, isn't it?
Of course it is an ambivalent, and it has its attendant snobbish elitisms. And but part of the reason was English is still the main language, and we are here because we knew English, and I think that was it. I don't think that a lot of the parents realized that it also came with an elitism about culture and religion.
And another side, drugs and rock and roll.
Well, that I think was not so much part of the school, but I have it in the town itself. And I think that being steeped in Western culture made us very ready for the rock and roll and the philosophy of personal freedom that came with it.
Now, your narrator is a young woman, Charo. Am I saying Apte? Is that right?
Correct. Absolutely right.
She's just barely 21. Uh-huh. Do the girls at the school come from the same kind of family background that she does?
Not really. Actually, they come from richer and more sophisticated backgrounds. They're mostly from Bombay. Charo herself is from a very small town, a reasonably small town in India, and she's had a very sheltered upbringing. She's from a Brahmin family. She's an only child. She is also marked. She has a blot on her face. So she's a very shy, self-conscious girl with a shell, with a hard shell on, and not as sophisticated as many of her students.
So the students would not be as religious. Her family is kind of prominent Brahmin family.
Yes.
But would there be a culture clash as a result?
When Charo first finds herself in the school, although she knows English literature really well, her accent is wrong, for example. And the girls are always making fun of that. I mean, that is part of the reason you go to these English schools is the right accent, very much like in England, I guess.
What does being from a Brahmin family come with? Most of these girls are still Hindus, aren't they?
Yeah.
This is a British school, but this is not a Christian school.
It's not a Christian school. The teachers were all Christian, except her. An exception was made for her. But most of the girls are actually, in my book as well, they're Hindu, Muslim, Parsi, they're everything. And for her, I think Brahmin didn't mean as much as just being from a very conventional background.
Now, she is considered unmarriageable. Is that because of the blot on her face?
That's because of the blot on her face and this sort of patriarchal society of arranged marriages from where the world she came from.
It would be hard for her to...
For a groom to accept her unless he was more handicapped than her, as I say.
So she develops a relationship later with Moira Prince. Mm-hmm. What's her role at the school?
We have this British teacher who is a sports teacher in the school, but she's actually the daughter of missionaries, but she's kind of a bad seed. She's not a missionary herself. She's not religious. She's more of a hippie. She's an iconoclastic, and she is gay, which Charo has no idea about.
But they develop a gay relationship.
They do.
How taboo would that have been in India in 1974? Well,
it's interesting. It is absolutely would have been taboo. In fact, I mean, the High Court in India, I think, just decriminalized gay relationships in 2009.
So it wouldn't have mattered whether this was in New Delhi or Calcutta, Lahore or Bombay, Panchgari being a small town, in the end, the taboo would apply everywhere?
The taboo would apply everywhere, but I have to say that this is very much part of it's a sort of Anglo-Indian boarding school situation. In the tradition of the boarding school, all girls boarding schools, there were always rumors. I went to a school like that. There were always rumors. It's an all-girls school. It's a boarding school. There are rumors of lesbian relationships or not. Not all of everything was rumor. Nothing ever happens in that school. And in fact, I based the two teachers on the. In my school, there used to be a rumor that the sports teacher was caught kissing a young teacher behind the pink curtain of the staff room. And I just started with that. And I felt that Charu at that point would have been more comfortable with women, oddly enough. And she doesn't suspect, I mean, when asked to go on a walk at night, if Murch, who she later has an affair with, if Murch had asked her, she would not have done it.
But the girls are kind of sophisticated, the girls at the school. And they, as we said, they smoke pot. They sneak out at night.
Well, the girls don't smoke pot, actually, in my book at all. It's really the hippies outside the school that are smoking.
This is all happening before the economic reforms.
Yes.
So we're talking about a very different India than today.
Absolutely.
Would this school be very different today?
Actually, I haven't been back for 25 years, but I am going next week, and I am going.
You'll find out.
I'll find out.
What would the characters be risking? The ones who belong to the Rule Breakers Club.
They actually just leave the school at night for one short. It just happens that the time that they leave, they stumble upon this sort of event that's the murder and become very embroiled in it. But as it were, if they were caught sneaking outside the school, they would probably have been suspended.
Were there girls like that at the school when you were there?
Of course. There are always rule breakers in the school.
My guest is Nina Currimboy, Currimboy. Her novel, Miss Timmins' School for Girls, is available in a paperback edition from Harper. The idea of family factors heavily in this book. How do the characters' understanding of their family histories affect them?
Charu has this sort of, not only the blot on her face, but what she considers the blot on her world, where her father has been disgraced. And so she carries that like a little burden on her. And part of her coming of age is to understand that her parents' sins do not come to her, but she has a right and an ability to make her own life, and that she discovers very much from the sort of Western culture of rock and roll.
Well, the reason I ask is not so much to get specific about the book, but more about the role of family in people's minds in India. I would think that if you go to a fancy school in America, you are very aware of your family background, if you are one of the wealthier kids, or if you're one of the poor kids. And I would assume the same thing is true in India, but is it even stronger there?
I think that in India, it is very strong in if you are from the sort of top 10%. But then there's a sort of vast middle-class part of the pyramid. And really, most of the girls in that school did come from that kind of background. It was not one of the very elite boarding schools. It was kind of a mid-level boarding school. And so I don't think at that point it played such a strong.
And then there's a murder. Who's killed?
Moira Prince, the teacher with who Charu has an affair, is murdered. On a rainy night, she falls off the cliff.
And that's why Charu becomes a suspect, because she's had a relationship with her.
Yes.
What kinds of rights did a woman suspected of murder in India in the 1970s have?
Well, she doesn't become a primary suspect, but the point is that the rights, I mean, the civil code is very, very forward even now. I mean, whether you're a woman or whether you're a man, it did not make a difference. What she felt socially would be very different. But under the law, I don't think it would make a difference.
A group of girls at the school launched their own investigation into the murder. And this moves us into British murder mystery territory.
Yes.
Did you start off the book thinking that you would be doing a Miss Marple kind of thing?
Well, I did. You know, we grew up on this sort of whole thing of Mallory Towers. It's Enid Blyton books, right? And they had mysteries, and then you go into Miss Marple. So, yes, I was playing with a lot of that.
And then you have the book set in the monsoon season, which forces everybody to pretty much stay indoors,
yes.
Which gives us almost that Agatha Christie kind of classical murder mystery isolation.
Right. And I think intensity and isolation are such an important element in a gothic kind of murder mystery.
Your book opens with two characters discussing Crime and Punishment, Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment. Does it have any special significance with regard to the novel or some of the other references you have later? Macbeth, for example.
Yeah, well, I used Macbeth and the Bible a lot for two reasons. One is it suited the gothic sort of monsoon murder mystery. And the second is when you're in a school and you're being educated, these kind of texts play such an important role in your life. You're reading all the time, you're studying all the time, and the teachers are steeped in it. And so it's fun to bring it all out rather than if you set the murder in an office in, you know.
Well, those are both wonderful classic works that deal with murder.
I'm sorry.
Crime and Punishment, Macbeth,
yes.
For example,
yes.
Some of the other books you talk about.
Yes.
So that was that something you were thinking about at the time?
Hey, of let's course, bring yeah. In. I mean, it was fun. I mean,
we'll,
part of
we'll
the
theorize
fun,
on murder.
Part of the fun of it was to sort of plant all these little books in it everywhere.
You came here. How old were you when you came to the United States?
I came to the United States in 1981. I was, I think, 26.
Now, Ayn Rand is also mentioned briefly in the
yes.
book. Is she somebody people in India even would think about?
We were obsessed by her.
It was socialist India at the time.
Yes, well, we were obsessed by her. I don't think we understood the whole impact of it. I mean, I think I was 15. I have this girl in my book reading it under, hiding it under A History of British India.
Do you think that you would have become a novelist if you'd stayed in India?
Well, my dream was to be a novelist since I was 14 years old, and I don't know why I waited till I was 50 to start my first novel, but I'm hoping it would have happened anyway.
We had to wait until your daughter became a teenager and you had the time to write.
Well, I started when she was 7, so she's now a teenager, but I'm thinking that the novel would have been different had I been in India, because here it's very nostalgic. I'd not been back to Panchgani and to the school for 25 years, and so.
In a way, that might have made it easier to write about the 1970s. If you'd been back, you might have had later things distort your memory of the experience.
Yeah, you're so right. I mean, I did not want to go back, and if I have some roads wrong in Panchgani, that's fine. I'm getting Facebook things saying I'm sort of wrong about Panchgani in certain ways, but.
It is fiction. You can make
exactly.
that point.
Exactly. I'm taking the fiction bypass for everything. Everything.
Meanwhile, I'm assuming there'll be other books about India or the United States where you've lived at least half your life.
Well, it's not going to be in Panchgani. But I am writing a second novel, and it is set in India.
Nana Kurumboy's first novel is Miss Timmins' School for Girls. It is published by Harper. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.